Welcome to the Fidelity Bank 9-month 2016 investor conference call. There'll be a question and answer session at the end of the call. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our 9-month conference call. I have my colleagues here. I have Executive Director, Corporate Banking, Yeye Adekpegba. I have Executive Director, Shared Services, Chijioke Ugochukwu. I have Chief Operations and Information Officer, Bolaoh Joshua. I have the CFO, Victor Abejegah. I welcome you to this call. I have Sam Obioha, Investor Relations Officer as well. Welcome to this call. Just to give a quick background before we go into the main issues. The recessionary environment with its attendant drop in government revenues, rising inflation, lower consumer disposable income, and of course, the tougher operating environment impacted the numbers we're discussing today. The headwinds, you can see that in asset quality of the financial services industry, as well as aggregate foreign trade transactions in the industry. Okay, other industries, of course, are not spared. Oil and gas services, FMCG, transportation, manufacturing. We as a bank, we're active in these sectors and have proactively. Our 9-month numbers closed at a PBT of 9.6 billion naira. This represents a 20% decline when compared did last year. When compared with 13.8 billion that we posted for same period last year. We took additional 4 billion naira provisions in recognition of the impact of naira devaluation on our trade finance portfolio and some sectors affected by the weaker macroeconomic indices. Okay, we also needed to increase provisioning buffers in anticipation of reduced asset quality as we approach the year-end. You will notice a 95.7% drop in our dividend income, specifically 1.3 billion naira in absolute terms. This was mainly due to the fact that MTN did not pay dividends, as some of you already know. Now, operating expenses increased 8.9%. So, recognizing these challenges, we had to increasingly focus on optimizing our balance sheet. This helped us cushion the effects of our numbers in Q3. Hence, you will notice the improved performance in our quarter three when compared to quarter two. So, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, our PBT grew 57.2%. This was driven by a 21% growth in net interest income. The interest income growth was largely driven by about 5.4 billion naira or 25.6% growth in interest income on loans, while interest income on liquid assets increased by 13.5% for the quarter. So on key performance highlights, you also notice that NIM increased to 7% from 6.5% at that half year. As the increase in our average yield on assets, that's 0.8%, it outpaced growth in our funding cost. So while average yield on assets increased by 0.8%, funding cost increased by just 0.4%. So the increased yield on earning assets was driven by repricing of loan book and higher yield on liquid assets. Now, we took significant revenue hit from the stoppage of international card transactions in June 2016. So you see that reflected on the e-banking income lines between Q2 and Q3. In specific terms, the revenues dropped on that line by about 3 billion naira. However, the increase in fund-based income helped us to offset that drop and drove higher PBT numbers that we saw in Q3. On deposits, we grew 3.4% or 60.3 billion actually, between December, with the devaluation of Naira accounting for 63.3 billion Naira of deposit growth. Well, the savings growth is organic, and that grew by about 20.4% from December. And this is because we've continued to push our retail strategy, mainly using electronic banking, electronic products and channels, as well as promos, savings promos that we've been driving. Now, for risk assets, there was a growth of 26.1% from December, with devaluation of the Naira accounting for 20.4% of our loan growth. The organic loan growth of about 5.6% was driven by on-lending facilities to the public sector. We spoke about this in Q2 conference call, where we talked about the volume of on-lending facilities that we did to the state from federal government. Okay, like I said earlier, we have continued to take a very prudent view of the impact of currency devaluation, the tougher environment, and declining consumer disposable income on selected sectors of our loan portfolio. Our NPL ratio increased to 4.5%. This was largely due to macroeconomic weakness, which has, of course, negatively impacted our asset quality metrics. We are still focusing on keeping our NPL ratio below 5% by the time the year closes. Now, for regulatory ratios, our capital adequacy ratio from 16.4% in Q2, we are at 16.8% in Q3. Well, the good news for us is that we expect capital adequacy ratio to inch up to above 18% once we've adjusted the excess non-distributable reserves of about 23 billion in our 2016 financial year audited accounts. We'll be making that adjustment, so our capital adequacy ratio we're projecting will be above 18%. Of course, you know we're required to have 15% by law. So, operating costs increased 8.9%, I said that earlier, and explained the 73.3% cost income ratio. In our last conference call, we guided on reducing operating expense by 2.5% for 2016 financial year. But we all know what has happened and the shocks throughout the year. So definitely achieving that number will be difficult. Okay. We have crossed 500,000 customer base on our instant banking product, the 77*770#. Of course, this is the USSD based, the mobile phone USSD technology based offering. We launched a payment service in partnership with NIS, telcos, and other banks for merchants using our instant banking product. This is called MCash. MCash was launched today with 6 banks already live, including Fidelity Bank. One of our merchants was successfully used to test this payment channel at the product launch of this afternoon. Those who were there would have witnessed that. So, our customer acquisition continues to grow. We have now crossed 3.6 million customer mark at the end of September 2016. Increased customer acquisition and increased adoption of electronic products helped us drive the increase in our retail deposit base. So we are pleased with the increased cross-selling of our electronic products, especially our instant banking and online retail services. Those who bank with us would have noticed even a further upgrade on our online service. Just recently, we further modified it. So this is really helping us drive customer satisfaction, efficiency, and so on. So I'll stop now and hand over to my colleague Bolaho, who will take us through detailed presentation, and then we can take questions. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, thank you, Nandi. I'll go through the detailed presentation, starting from slide 4, just an overview of the operating environment. Inflation at 17.9%, external reserves below $24 billion. The ADB has given us a $600 million budget support package that was approved yesterday for Nigeria. Still a tight monetary environment that has led to an increase in funding costs and definitely higher yields on government securities. CBN continues to intervene, you know, to ease FX pressures in selected sectors. 75% of inflows from licensed IMTOs are now channeled to the BDC. Despite these measures, there's still significant demand pressure on the Naira, and the devaluation of the currency and lower GDP projections still pose an increased risk to the credit portfolio of the bank. Slide 5 just shows an overview of Fidelity Bank and just the key highlights, 239 offices, 3.6 million accounts, 1.4 trillion in total assets, and slide 7 speaks to our performance highlights for the period. Interest income was up 3%, fee income was down 3%, NIM 7%, and then PBT was down by 28.7% to 9.8 billion. Cost of risk is at 1.5%. We've guided for 1.5%. We hope to keep it at that ratio. NPL ratio is 4.5%. As at H1, it was about 3.7, so it's gone up. We'll explain that later. Coverage ratio is about 84%, and FCY loans are now about 45% of the loan book. Capital adequacy ratio is 16.8. Liquidity is at 34, above the regulatory threshold. So what were the key drivers of this performance? I'm on slide 8. Namdi has explained the decline in PBT, mainly due to increased provisioning of about 4 billion and then decline in dividend income. Operating income grew by 8.6% year on year, but the growth in operating costs by 8.9% outpaced that, even though the cost growth is still significantly below the rate of inflation. Risk assets have grown by about 26% for the year, roughly about 151 billion. The devaluation alone accounts for about 118, which is about 20% of that. And then organic loan growth is roughly 6%. Principally, that was driven by on-lending facilities to the public sector. The cost of risk is 1.5% because we've taken impairment charges of about 7.2 billion in the last 2 quarters. On slide 9, just explaining further the key highlights, NPL ratio of 4.5%. We hope to still keep this below 5%. It's a very challenging operating environment. For capital adequacy ratio, though it's 16.8, just like he explained, when we adjust for the excess non-disposable reserves, which I'll show on the capital slide, we should get to above 18%. Deposit growth was about 3.4%, about 26 billion net, and then right now, low-cost deposits account for about 78% of the deposit base. Our savings has grown by 20% from December 2015. We're running a new promo, our Get a Lot promo. We expect this to drive it even further. When I get to the slide on retail banking, you'll see we've had a steeper growth between Q2 and Q3 compared to Q1 and Q2. On our USSD product, we believe the new product just launched by NIBS today, the M-Cash, which allows merchants to receive payments using the short code, should drive the adoption of this product across the industry. So it's not a strictly Fidelity product. It's a collaboration between the telcos, NIBS, and all the banks. Slide 10 just shows a year-on-year comparison of the financial statements. You look at the key pressure points. Even though gross earnings were up 3%, provisions were up about 100%, and then we have net losses on financial instruments also about 1.3 billion. All those cumulating in a decline in profitability of 3.9 billion. But you look at over underlining fundamentals of the business, operating income was up 5.3 billion over the period, about 8.6%. So the fundamentals are still strong. On slide 11, it just shows a quarter-on-quarter trend. Quarter 1 was 4 billion, quarter 2 was 2.3 billion, and then quarter 3 was 3.5 billion. The numbers for quarter 3 was despite the significant dip in the revenues from electronic banking, which were able to offset from increased balance sheet optimization. So even though revenues from electronic banking were down 3.3 billion, net interest income, fund-based income was up 3.4 billion for the quarter. On slide 12, just shows the breakdown of the balance sheet from a year-on-year basis, and not surprisingly, you see there's been a decline in liquid assets from placements and also treasury bills. There's been substantial growth, you see, in the Naira loan book is due to unlending to the public sector, and then the bulk of the growth you see from the FCY portfolio is actually due to the devaluation of the currency. On a year-on-year basis, actually, the portfolio has come down, but because of the devaluation, it looks like the portfolio is up. From a deposit perspective, demand deposits are up about 20%, savings deposits are up, and then time deposits are down significantly by about 87 billion. It's been a tighter monetary environment, and so with interest rates skyrocketing, a lot of large fund providers are actually asking for rates that are almost commensurate to treasury bills. So over the last one quarter, we've shared about 64 billion on that line. On slide 15, it's just a breakdown of the gross earnings on a quarter-on-quarter basis. I think a significant pressure point for the last quarter was electronic banking revenues, and then interest income on loans, which was up 5.3 billion, both due to the expansion of the loan book and also due to the repricing of the loan book. Slide 16 just shows a graphical trend of the key drivers of revenues for the first 9 months and then on a quarter-on-quarter basis. For the first 9 months, basically driven more from interest income on loans and then electronic banking income. And then for the quarter under review, driven more from interest income on loans, liquid assets, and then trade income. On slide 17, just a review of our net interest margin. Went down slightly in H1 to 6.5, it's back to 7%. You see yield on earning assets up from 11.8% to 12.6% for the 9 months, and then funding costs went up from 4.6% to 5%. So we think we'll still be able to deliver on our guidance for the year, which is 6.57%. Slide 18 shows the trend analysis of electronic banking income hit a high of about 4.8 billion in Q2, and then for Q3 down to about 1.5 billion. But we still see significant scope for improving banking revenues from emerging products like the Star 770 and new digital payment innovations. Slide 19 speaks about expenses. It's grown 8.9% year-on-year. And then if you look at the quarter-on-quarter trend, it was up 8.7% on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Slide 20 just speaks to cost dynamics and then CIR and staff cost over total expenses over the period. And then slide 21 is a detailed breakdown of the cost lines. We've made some gains, been able to have some cost savings on about 9 of the cost lines, but the major ones that have gone up have basically outpaced the other ones. On slide 22, we just shows almost the same slide as the last one on income. The key cost drivers for the year and then the key cost drivers and for the quarter. And if you look at for the year, technology cost, branding cost, depreciation, electricity and diesel, and then consultancy. On slide 24, just a review of the funding base. Customer deposits up 3.4%, and then just looking at the revenue mix and the quarter-on-quarter growth over the period, and then you look at savings deposits year-on-year, it's up 35%, about 37 billion. That's a line we're very focused on. And then you look at slide 25. It's just a breakdown of the deposits into each of the products, and then it shows you what percentage of the deposit comes from the devaluation impact. Like I said earlier, low-cost deposits are 78%, largely due to the decline in the time deposit portfolio. On slide 26, a trend of retail banking, personal banking. Savings started from about 119 billion at the end of last year. It's up to 143. If you look at the growth between Q2 and Q3, you see it's beginning to ramp up, and then Total low-cost, retail low-cost deposit is $225 billion. Our retail assets have declined from $66 billion at the end of the financial year to about $58 billion over the period. Slide 27 just gives a breakdown of our liquid assets, the various forms of liquid assets, and then our LDR, which is roughly about 78%. Slide 28 shows a breakdown of the loan book. Even though the loan book has grown $158 billion at 26.5%, we're saying that about 20% of that is due to the currency devaluation. A lot of the growth you see in some of the sectors, oil and gas, manufacturing, and transport, are basically driven from an FX perspective. On slide 29, you see a quarterly breakdown of the loan book over the last four quarters. And for Q3, as of Q3 2016, look at oil and gas, the major segments. Oil and gas is about 28%, power is about 10, manufacturing is about 10, transport is about 10, and public sector is about 14%. Those are the key sectors. And in general commerce is down to about 4.8%. And then slide 30 shows a quarter-on-quarter growth in the loan book over the period. The bulk of what you see for the first three sectors are basically currency depreciation between Q2 and Q3. And then real estate and construction, some organic growth. And then you look at most of the other sectors, about nine of the other sectors, there's been a decline in Q3. I'm on slide 31, an analysis of the loan book into LCY, FCY, and then the devaluation impact. We've been very conscious in asset creation this year. It's a very difficult environment to grow risk assets. And slide 32 just shows the NPL book. And the NPL book has grown by about $8 billion between last financial year and Q3. So NPLs are up from $26 billion to about $34 billion. Definitely, we spoke about the impact of the trade finance portfolio on the loan book. And if you look at the key sectors that have the highest NPLs, general commerce is 15%, manufacturing is 12.4%, FI and insurance about 11%, transport is about 5%, construction is about 7%, we have some delayed contractor payments there. And then slide 33 just shows a breakdown of the NPL on a quarter-on-quarter basis. So there's been a significant jump in the NPLs between Q2 and Q3. We're being very proactive, and as we see strains in any sector, we classify and make adequate provisions, and that is part of what has moved up our provisioning to about $8 billion for the year. Slide 34, just a further analysis of NPL and the coverage ratios. Coverage ratio is about 84%. As at the end of last year, it was roughly 80%. Cost of risk is 1.5% right now. We don't expect it to exceed this by the end of the financial year. Slide 35 speaks to our capital, and what we've tried to do there is also to simulate the impact of when we write back the non-distributable reserves, and that's the last column. And when we adjust for that, CAR should be up from 16.8% to about 18.5%. So from a capital perspective, we are very comfortable. Slide 36 shows a breakdown of our business segments. Corporate banking generates about 45% of revenues. The business in Lagos about 21%, the north about 15%, and then the south about 19%. And from an asset perspective, about 62% of the loan book is still in corporate banking. We had a medium-term target of 50%. The devaluation actually changed that coloration significantly, because a significant portion of our FCY book is actually in the corporate banking segment. Just further analysis of the business segments on slide 37, which shows what each area contributes to key lines on revenues, deposits, and loans. And on slide 39, I've had some changes on the board. The chairman retired after 11 years. We have a new chairman, who was former deputy governor of the bank and a former banker that has held a lot of executive positions. This is still subject to regulatory approval. And then we have two new non-executive directors who have significant experience both in the financial services sector and in other sectors. So slide 43 is just our guidance for the year. We are behind target on about three of the lines. It's been a very difficult and challenging financial year, but we hope to keep traction and still deliver decent numbers by the end of the year. Thank you very much, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. We'll now open the lines for questions. To ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad. That's 0 to ask a question, and 7 to cancel your question request. Your first question is from Tunde Abidoye. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for hosting the conference call. I have a couple of questions. The first one is on FX liquidity. Just want you to provide some color on FX liquidity and what proportion of your customers' FX demand is being met on the interbank market at this time. Related to that is that you've got around $165 million of multilateral debt on your books. Do you have adequate FX liquidity to meet this at this time? If not, would you be rolling that over? Then on the exposures, can you please provide an update on IQ and Oando exposures? And how much of your upstream oil and gas loans have been restructured in the last 6 months? Then the transport loan book has grown significantly, by about 42% year-to-date. Can you give an explanation as to what is driving the growth in the segment and what kind of opportunities you're seeing in that segment? Thanks.
I'll be responding to your question on the FX demand, the proportion that is being met. Clearly, we understand where the Nigerian market is when it comes to the FX side. But as tight as it is, we're still able to have a clientele base that could provide substantial parts, even not so much, you know, in terms of proportion being met. Currently, we can say we're meeting about 10 to 15% of our total customer demand on the FX side.
Okay. I'll take the second question on multilateral debt on our balance sheet and if we have adequate liquidity to meet it. Yes, we do. We actually have a syndicated facility that matures in December. It's $125 million. And part of the clauses available to some of the lenders was if there was a change in the macroeconomic fundamentals of the country, they were allowed to call in their facility. And two of them elected to when the country rating was downgraded, and we paid them off over $35 million. So, yes, we have the capacity to meet the liquidity as it comes through. Update on, you spoke on two obligors, update on the two obligors. I think one of the obligors, the loan has been restructured. That was an industry restructuring. And on the second obligor, the central bank has mandated the banks on what to do, and we're fully compliant with it. On the transport segment, the bulk of the loans you see there is actually vessel financing for vessels that have confirmed contracts with the IOCs. So the loan growth you're seeing there is basically driven by the currency devaluation because they're foreign currency loans.
Please go ahead. Thank you.
We'll take the next question.
Thank you. Your next question is from Jeremy. Please go ahead. Your next question is from Alamutu. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thank you for hosting the call today. I just have a few questions, please. I have a follow-up question on the exposure to Aiteo and Oando. Can you tell us what the total amount of restructured or renegotiated loans is as a proportion of your total loan book? Secondly, on Oando, can you please just remind us what the current CBN directive is? I think previously you had provided for around 5% of that exposure. And third question on FX liquidity, and just as this relates to your 2018 Eurobond, I just wanted to know how you manage the upcoming coupon payments on that bond. Do you keep the payments offshore with a correspondent bank, or are those payments kept at Fidelity Bank within Nigeria? And would you consider buying back that security? And then a final question on capital. Can you just explain to us why it is that you are going to be able to release these reserves before the end of the year? And also, are you still including that 2018 Eurobond within your Tier 2 capital? Thank you.
Okay, so last year the central bank said banks should make provisions for a particular obligor, which we've done, but we have not yet written back the provisions back to our profitability. That's for one of the obligors. For the second obligor, our total exposure is about $172 million. That's our total exposure to the company. For FX, in terms of dividends, yes, we leave the funds are with our offshore banks, and then we have a paying agent who the funds are transferred to, and then they make the dividend payments to the note holders. So we have a dividend payment coming up next week, which we've already positioned the funds with the paying agent. How are we able to release funds from the non-distributable reserves? Based on the regulation, the difference between your provisioning on IFRS, your impairment charges on IFRS, and provisioning on the local accounting standards are supposed to be passed to an account, to a reserve called non-distributable reserves, which reduces your qualifying capital. What we were passing to the non-distributable reserves was our total provisioning under the local accounting standards and not the difference. So what we are releasing now is actually the difference between the provisions under the local accounting standards and our IFRS impairment, which we already have regulatory approvals to do. Why we say at the end of the financial year is because for capital adequacy purposes, the central bank will only work with audited numbers.
Are you retaining your bonus
for 2018?
Oh, well, we've not yet taken a firm decision on what we'll do. We'll decide on that by H1 next year.
Thank you. The next question is from Niyi Olukoya. Please go ahead. Your lines are muted. Please go ahead.
Okay. Can you please shed some light on the deposit makeup? For example, what percentage of a deposit book is from the public sector or other state-owned entities or TSA-type funding?
The part of our deposit book that's from the public sector, I mean, federal public sector is gone. from a TSA perspective, and from a state sector, I'm not sure we have up to 3 or 4% because even the states themselves are cash strapped. So leaving excess deposits now is very difficult. So it's a very negligible part of our deposit base. What you have basically these days are flow through collections, which you do, and then you remit same day back to the applicable government agencies.
Your next question is from Jennifer Pasma. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to confirm that the calculation that you show of the coverage ratio, is that is just the impairment over the NPLs. It's not including the statutory reserve, is it?
No, it doesn't include the statutory reserves. It's just impairment over the NPLs.
Great, thank you.
Your next question is from Constantine. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for the presentation. So we've seen in the recent quarters that there was quite a significant variability in the other comprehensive income of Fidelity Bank, specifically in the line of fair value changes on available-for-sale securities. We understand why this might be happening because of the available-for-sale holdings of treasury bills and treasury bonds by the bank. But surprisingly, we have not seen quite such variability across other banks, across other large banks in the country. So would you be able to provide some comments why Fidelity is different, why this variability exists in the other comprehensive income of Fidelity Bank? Are the investment policies different for Fidelity compared to other banks? And I'll follow up with the second question afterwards.
Okay. At our conference call at the beginning of the year, we said we're going to play at the short end of the curve because we felt that the interest rate curve was a little bit abnormal. So what we've kept a very small, trading book in terms of securities on the trading book. And what you have under AFS, because of the rising interest rate environment, definitely we will be taking some hit on that line. But those losses only become realizable if we have to dispose of that portfolio before the maturity of those instruments. But we also see a positive that has played out from deliberately staying at the short end of the curve, because what we see now is that as the portfolio matures and we invest in new liquid assets, we get higher yields, which has played out on a quarter-on-quarter basis. When you look at our income on liquid assets, even though the liquid assets declined, you will see that the income on liquid assets went up.
Do you know, could you comment why other banks do not record these gains and losses in other comprehensive income in available for sale securities? Why is Fidelity Bank different in this respect?
I mean, for us, I think everybody's portfolio allocation strategy is different. So I do not know the positions people have in those, in those buckets and at what point in time they actually bought those positions. So someone who bought at a point in time when the interest rates were very high is not going to take a hit on it. And someone who's bought when interest rates were maybe lower last year and took bills that were 365-day bills and are just maturing, you know, in the last 9 months, will possibly have a different outlook.
Thank you. The next question is from Bimi Salon. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon. My question is just basically going to on your NPLs. Why the NPL in transport and why the NPL in general commerce and manufacturing rising significantly over Q3? And the second is on the FX side. So what's the status with regards to the CBN LNG dividend payments? Have you completed the payments, or what's the status on the outstanding balances on that loan? And then what's your position on your balance sheet on a currency basis? What's your net long position? Are you net long on net short dollars, and what's the size of that? And then I think somebody asked you earlier about your Eurobond payment. Are you looking to redeem it or refinance or something? What's the outlook on that? And then I think you mentioned earlier about normal or abnormal interest rate curve. So what's your outlook for interest rates over the next, say, 6 to 12 months? That'll be all.
For general commerce, the MTL is about 15%. We spoke the other time about, we said the trade finance portfolio, you know, was impacted by devaluation. Obviously, we've had some clients there when the devaluation happened. In terms of the margins and their capacity to absorb that level of devaluation, they were not able to absorb it. So we had to make provisions for some of those loans. So you see that the MPL on the general commerce moved from about 8.8% to about 15% between last year, end of last year, and 9 months. Now, for manufacturing, it used to be possibly one of the highest sectors we had MPLs in, and some of the companies too, from the devaluation of the currency and from a trade perspective, have been caught up in capacity to be able to service their obligations. So that is what is driving the MPLs on those two lines. On the plan for the net FX position, I think the last time we spoke about it, and we said on the average, you won't see us with positions of more than $15, $20 million. So we're not going to have a significant revaluation gain or loss, as the case may be. Eurobond, we said by H1 next year, we'll have come out with a more definitive outlook of what we're going to do. So we've not decided if we're going to refinance, if we're going to pay off. We've not taken any decision on that. Outlook on interest rates, right now, it's still a very tight environment, and we think that with the high interest rates, from the fiscal side, they want the interest rates to come down because they need to borrow to fund the budget. From the monetary side, obviously the interest rate is also an attraction to attract portfolio inflows in. So for us, outlook for interest rates, we think it's still going to be slightly tight going down into the year. But if we're able to get a lot of the multilateral loans that the government is trying to get, then we will begin to see a reduction in the interest rate environment, because at that point in time now, there might be no need to have such significant high yields on the instruments to attract the foreign investors. We've also seen inflation start coming down in terms of the pace of growth in inflation. So it seems like we might be getting near the ceiling, but that still depends on the currency situation, because the currency is also a key driver of what happens from an inflation perspective. So for us, I mean, in a nutshell, we're still going to be playing at the short end of the curve so that we can respond to changes in interest rates in a very dynamic way. Nandi will take the question on the LNG dividend payment.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Nandi. On the LNG dividend payment, we are actually on course, and we are keeping to the terms we agreed. Only 5 or so days ago, we returned a significant portion. We've remitted that already. So we are on course to completely make the repayments. We're just on course. That's the summary.
Thank you. The next question is from Ndubisi Odike. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation. I have a few questions. How much of your loans have been structured so far? That's my first question. Also, if you could provide an update on your power sector loans. You seem to have some significant exposure to that sector. So are all the loans currently performing, or have you had to restructure or any of those loans? Then my third question is, my third and final question is, I will appreciate if you could explain the driver for increased NPL classification in your downstream oil and gas book. I've seen the NPL increase from 262 million to 1.4 billion this year alone. So what's happening there?
Okay. In total, between last year and 9 months this year, it's 27% of the loan book that has been restructured. Major sectors where we've had restructuring, we've had the energy segment, we've had the manufacturing, and we've had some in the power segment. In terms of... my colleague, will, the ED Corporate Bank, will take the update on exposures to the power sector, but I'll just talk about NPL in the oil and gas segment. At our full-year conference call, we said we had a particular exposure in the downstream segment, which we're looking at. We have to classify it. It's slightly over a billion, and that is what is responsible for the growth in that NPL. So it's a single customer, and it's slightly over a billion.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Yeye. I'm Executive Director of Corporate Banking. On the power assets, we have restructured some of them. We took the opportunity that the regulators offered about 2 years ago to restructure this portfolio to reflect the market realities. And that we have done. And since then, all the assets are doing well in our books.
Thank you. Your next question is from Adetayo Adedeji. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. At half year, you said you had restructured like 60 to 70% of your loans in the oil and gas sector. I'd like to know the current situation of the restructured loans. I'd like to know the impact or the pressure, the current situation and the impact that can have on your NPL at full year. Particularly, I would like the guidance for NPL by full year. So if you could just give me that. I want to know if there's any pressure regarding the restructured loans in the oil and gas as at the moment. My second question would be if you could just add more color on your FX income. I can see a decline of like 13.5% from 9M 2015 to this period, 9M 2016. And I'm kind of wondering if you could just break it down. How much of this is from trading income? How much is from revaluation gains? I'd like to know in this period, I understand that you're not that net long in foreign currency, but in this period where we have most other banks recording high revaluation gains, I'd like to know why there's a decline in this line item. And then lastly, I'd like to know about your dividend payment. What's your plan for full year 2016 about dividend? What's your guidance for that? Thank you.
Okay. Factors of the assets that were restructured, as at the time we did the restructuring, the oil price was lower than what it was now. So in terms of outlook, it's a more positive outlook. However, the restructuring for some of them, in terms of production challenges, that was not there. So we've had some of the obligors who've had production challenges because of the attacks. But net-net, they are on course in meeting the restructuring terms. We still have an exposure we're working on currently on restructuring. And so when we said that 60-70% of the oil and gas book had been restructured, that's included in the overall 27% of the portfolio, which I said has been restructured. Guidance for NPL for the full year, it's 4.5% now. Our target is to keep it under 5%. What are the key drivers? Why the decline in FX income? What you see there as FX income, if you look at our results for quarter one 2015, there was strong income growth from a trading perspective. That was slightly over maybe 2-3 billion or something thereabout. So a lot of the decline you are seeing on a year-on-year basis on FX income is coming from the trading book. In terms of revaluation income, why other people are reporting and we are not, I guess it depends on different balance sheet management strategies for different institutions. But we've decided, and also based on the structure of our balance sheet, to not have significant exposures there. In terms of dividend payment, I think on our guidance, we have 30 to 50% guidance for dividend payment, which is also our dividend policy. And by and large, we're still on course with that.
Thank you. The next question is from Constantine. Please go ahead.
Hello again. Second question on the presentation is that could you please share some views on the outlook for the banking regulation in Nigeria? Do you know if Central Bank of Nigeria is discussing some additional regulations regarding capital, liquidity, non-performing loans? Could you please share your view about the outlook?
Well, we definitely can't speculate here. The Central Bank has plans. They will make it known to us at the right time. So we would prefer not to speculate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Once again, to ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad or 7 to cancel your question request. That's 0 to ask a question and 7 to cancel your request. Thank you. Your next question is from Tolu. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon again. I just have a quick follow-up question, please. Just looking ahead, I just wanted to know what sectors of the economy we can expect to see you recording more significant loan growth, because you've already said, obviously, there are problems in general commerce and oil and gas and so on. So I wanted to hear where you're seeing more positive developments, please. Thank you.
I'm not sure it's as much sector specific now. I think it's more client specific at this point in time, in terms of outlook for loan growth. So most of the sectors are challenged, because I don't think there's really any sector that's been immune from the economic headwinds. But what you see is that even within those sectors, the players have different strengths. However, sectors that don't have a high import component seem to be able to weather it better. And so from an SME's perspective, for example, in the hospitality space, we've seen some of the SMEs do much better, you know, because the pricing for some of the high-end brands, because of the recessionary environment, it's reducing the occupancy rate. So what you just see is pockets of opportunities which you can take advantage of. But in terms of general outlook on asset creation, I would say we're generally bearish.
Thank you. There are currently no questions at this time. Please go ahead. We have no questions at this time.
Okay. Are we on? Okay. Well, thank you all for your participation today, and we look forward to the next call. We'll continue to stay focused on our medium-term strategy and continue to weather the storm and take advantage of emerging opportunities to make sure that we close the year on a stronger note. On that note, I would like to thank you all. Goodbye.
That concludes today's call. Thank you.